सान्दीपने सकृत् प्रोक्तम् तस्मै प्रादाद्वरं पुत्रम् मृतं पञ्चजनोदरात् सान्दीपने ऑफ सान्दीपनि मुनि सकृत् वन्स ओनली प्रोक्तम् इंस्ट्रक्टेड् ब्रह्मा All the Vedas with their different branches of knowledge. Aditya, after studying, Savistaram, in all details, Tasmai, unto him, Pradat, rewarded, Varam, a benediction, Putram, his son, Mritam, who was already dead, Panchajana, the region of the departed souls, Udarat, from within. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation, the Lord learned all the Vedas with their different branches of knowledge simply by hearing them once from His teacher, Sandipani Muni, whom He rewarded by bringing back His dead son from the region of Yamaloka. Purport, no one but the Supreme Lord can become well versed in all the branches of Vedic wisdom simply by hearing once from his teacher. Nor can anyone bring a dead body back to life after the soul has already gone to the region of Yamaraj. But Lord Krishna ventured to the planet of Yamaloka and found the dead son of his teacher and brought him back to his father as a reward for the instructions received. The Lord is constitutionally well versed in all the Vedas. And yet, to teach by example that everyone must go to learn the Vedas from an authorized teacher and must satisfy the teacher by service and reward, he himself adopted this system. The Lord offered his services to his teacher Sandipani Muni, and the Muni, knowing the power of the Lord, asked something which was impossible to be done by anyone else. The teacher asked that his beloved son who had died be brought back to him, and the Lord fulfilled the request. The Lord is not, therefore, an ingrate to anyone who renders him some sort of service. The devotees of the Lord who always engage in his loving service are never to be disappointed in the progressive march of devotional service. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Virim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So today we are reading from chapter 3 of Canto 3. We've just started chapter 3. We are at the beginning of chapter 3. And this is the conversation between Uddhava and Vidura, which is still continuing. So just to give a little bit of background, Vidura has gone on pilgrimage after being insulted by Duryodhana, and Duryodhana drove him out of the kingdom. So Vidura has taken that opportunity to go on pilgrimage. And while on pilgrimage, Vidura comes across Uddhava sitting on the banks of the Yamuna. And knowing that Uddhava is a pure devotee and an intimate associate of the Lord, Vidura actually sits down so that he can hear transcendental instructions from Uddhava, and then he can also hear lots of glories about the Lord. Because Vidura has come to know that the Lord has left the planet by the time this conversation is happening. So he's very aggrieved. He's feeling separation from the Lord, and therefore he wants to satisfy his aggrievement by actually sitting in front of Uddhava and hearing about the glories of the Lord. So this conversation is continuing, and chapter 2, the previous chapter described all the pastimes. Uddhava described all the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan. like starting from his birth, how he was taken to Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, and then the various demons he kills. And in the last two verses, we saw how he lifted the Govardhan hill, and then his Ras Leela pastime Uddhava describes. And in this chapter, Uddhava starts describing from when Krishna and Balaram leave Vrindavan and go to Mathura. Akrura comes and takes Krishna and Balaram away, and now they have come to Mathura. And in the first verse we heard yesterday, how Krishna and Balaram kill Kamsa. How that whole, wrestling arena, the match in the wrestling arena, how they kill Chanduka and Mushtika, and then they kill Kamsa. So that was in the first verse. So once they have killed Kamsa, in the second verse, the pastime is proceeding. What happens after they kill Kamsa? So we see that essentially the second and third chapter of this canto, where Uddhava is describing various pastimes to Vidura, various pastimes of Krishna, it's actually a very an overall synopsis of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the 10th canto, all these pastimes are described in great detail, but in these two chapters, Uddhava is giving a synopsis to all of us through Vidura, where we can understand the pastimes of the Lord, like not in so much detail, but we can run through the pastimes of the Lord right from his birth till he disappears from this planet. So that is the purpose of these two chapters, giving us an overview of Krishna's pastimes, which will be elaborated later in the 10th canto by Sukadev Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. So in today's verse, we see that Krishna and Balaram have actually gone to the ashram of Sandipani Muni. And if we go back a little, like after Kamsa was killed, Krishna and Balaram actually go and release their mother and father, Devaki and Vasudev, from prison. And this whole pastime has been given in detail in the Krishna book by Srila Prabhupada. So there Prabhupada describes that Krishna and Balaram release Devaki and Vasudev, and they, very moving union of Krishna and Balaram with their parents is described. And now Devaki and Vasudev have started taking charge of executing their parental duties towards Krishna and Balaram. So it is described in the Krishna book that the first duty which they execute towards their sons is they get their second initiation or their sacred Brahmin thread ceremony done. And they are given the Gayatri Mantra. The whole initiation ceremony was conducted by Garga Muni. And he gives them the sacred Gayatri Mantra and their sacred thread. And it is described that Krishna and Balaram actually execute all the rituals which are required of a second initiate very strictly. And they actually chant the Gayatri Mantra very nicely. They follow all these prescribed rules and regulations of a second initiate. It's not that they think, we are the lords, we are above all these things, so we don't need to do that. No, they do all the activities which are required after the sacred thread ceremony. Very meticulously they execute their duties as second initiates. And as was the custom in those days, that once a child takes second initiation, like after their sacred thread ceremony is over, they have to actually go and live in the ashram of a guru, where they study the Vedic scriptures under the guru, and they also render service to the guru. So they actually move away. Even though they are princes, whatever families they may come from, they actually move away from the comforts of their home. And they go and live in the ashram of the guru, and they render menial service to their guru. So in this case, Krishna and Balaram accept Sandipani Muni as their guru. And they move into his ashram. And there they have started living under Sandipani Muni, and they have started rendering menial services to Sandipani Muni. And in turn, Sandipani Muni is imparting the Vedic knowledge to Krishna and Balaram. So they stayed at the ashram for a long time, like for many, many days they stayed at the ashram, and they served their guru, and they learned the 64 arts and sciences from the Vedas, it is described. And these 64 arts and sciences, Krishna and Balaram mastered in 64 days. So as is mentioned in this verse also, that only by hearing once, Krishna and Balaram could actually assimilate whatever their guru was teaching them. They did not have to, the guru did not have to keep giving repeated instructions. Unlike us, people like us, like especially speaking of myself, we have to hear again and again and still the message doesn't go in. But Krishna and Balaram had to hear just once, and they assimilated all the 64 arts and sciences of the Vedas. So quickly they assimilated all that. So Sandipani Muni teaches them all this, and after that, Krishna and Balaram, as a reward to show that they are very grateful to their guru, they offer a reward, they offer a Guru Dakshina to their guru. And as part of the Guru Dakshina, then Sandipani Muni asks Krishna and Balaram for something impossible, something which no ordinary mortal soul can achieve. Because Sandipani Muni knew that these are the supreme lords who have come to take instructions from him, who have turned to learn, come to learn the Vedas from him. So he knew that I can ask the impossible from Krishna and Balram. And therefore he asked them to bring his dead son back, who had died some days ago, who had drowned in the ocean apparently. So he asks Krishna and Balram to bring their dead son back. So we see that in this small purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada is giving us so many instructions. And the main instruction which Prabhupada is giving us is that how the Lord is setting an ideal example. How the Lord, even though he is transcendental and he is above all these, you know, so-called duties of the world, still the Lord does all these activities just to set an ideal example for people, all of us, to follow. So Prabhupada says that there are many different aspects which Prabhupada describes. The first example that Krishna and Balram are, you know, showing us by their own activity is that how, even though they are the Lord, they accepted a spiritual master in their life. So Prabhupada says that this is something which everyone needs to learn. That if Krishna and Balram, who are the Lord himself, accepted a guru to learn the Vedic knowledge, then who are we? We also need to accept a guru. It should be an urgency within our heart to accept a guru, a bona fide guru, so that we can go and learn the scriptures from him. So that is the first example which Krishna and Balaram are setting. And then the second example which they are setting for all of us to follow is that not only accepting the guru, but they rendered menial services unto the guru. They stayed in the ashram and like ordinary people, they were serving their guru. They were carrying out all menial tasks for their guru. Going and collecting firewood, cleaning the guru's ashram, all sorts of activities they were doing for their guru. Not that, oh, we are princes. They were actually now princes because they were already back with Vasudeva and Devaki. Or not that we are the Supreme Lord, so we don't need to do these activities. No, they were setting an ideal example by menially serving their guru. So that is the second example which the Lord is setting in this verse. And the third example the Lord is setting is that how grateful one must be. So Prabhupada writes over here that Krishna and Balaram, the Lord is therefore not an ingrate to anyone who renders him some sort of service. So Sandipani Muni imparted Vedic knowledge to the Lord, and the Lord is very grateful to Sandipani Muni for the service which he imparted to him. And therefore, as a matter of gratitude, as a matter of etiquette, they actually offer some Guru Dakshina to their Guru, that you have rendered us so much service by teaching us all these Vedic scriptures. So we also want to reciprocate with you, and we also want to fulfill some desire. We want to render some reward to you. So that is the third example which Krishna and Balaram are setting in this. Now actually, if you see, we know from the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, Vedeshcha Sarver Aham Eva Vedyo. So Lord Krishna is the source of all Vedic knowledge. He need not learn any Vedas from anyone because he is the source. All the Vedas have come from him. He imparted the Vedic knowledge first unto Brahma. And from Brahma all this Vedic knowledge has flown in this material universe. So the Lord need not actually go and learn from anyone. And the Lord actually need not feel that, oh, this, there is something which I achieved. I came to know so much about the Vedic scriptures. But no. In fact, the source of Vedic knowledge for Sandipani Muni is the Lord. Who has given that Vedic knowledge to Sandipani Muni? Obviously, it's the Lord who has given the Vedic knowledge to Sandipani Muni. But still the Lord is showing gratitude. That I have learned something from you and therefore I want to reward you accordingly. That is what the Lord is showing in this pastime. So they offer Guru Dakshina to Sandipani Muni, and Sandipani Muni knew the prowess of the Lord. In fact, what Sandipani Muni does is he goes and consults his wife. That has been described in the Krishna book by Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna and Balaram offer this Guru Dakshina, he goes and consults his wife and he asks her that, you know, these two personalities are offering me some Guru Dakshina. What should we ask them as Guru Dakshina? And both of them had seen the unusual activities of Krishna and Balaram, and both of them knew through these unusual activities which they had seen or they had heard that these are the Supreme Lord. So then they decided that we can ask something unusual from them which no ordinary person can achieve. And therefore they asked Krishna and Balaram to get their dead son back. So this whole pastime has been elaborately described in the 10th canto as well as in the Krishna book by Srila Prabhupada. So it is mentioned that Sandipani Muni's son was actually on the banks of the ocean at a place called Prabhas Kshetra, which is in Gujarat. So he was there, and the ocean, actually apparently he drowned in the ocean. So Krishna and Balaram go, they mount their chariot and they go to the bank, like to the bank of this ocean at Prabhakshetra. And they call upon the deity who is controlling the ocean. And they tell him that, oh, you have taken the son, you have taken the son of a guru away. Kindly return him to us. And then the deity, like the ocean personified in the deity form, appears before Krishna and Balaram. And he says that it was not actually I who drowned this boy into my waters, but there is a demon called as Panchajana who is living within the depths of my own, of the ocean. And he was the one who captured your guru's son. And he has taken them deep into the, he has taken him deep into the ocean. So maybe he's still there in his belly. So why don't you all go and you all attack, you all kill this demon and you all take him out of his belly. That is what the ocean god reveals to Krishna and Balaram. So Krishna dives deep into the ocean and he finds this demon, Panchajana. Now the speciality of this demon was that he actually had the body made up of a conch. So Krishna actually goes to this demon and he kills the demon. But when he kills the demon, he discovers that the sun is no longer there in his stomach. He hasn't swallowed the sun. So then the Lord knows that, okay, maybe the sun has moved on and he's already gone to the planet of Yamraj. So what he does is he kills the demon and then he takes, because the body was made up of conch, he actually takes that conch shell with himself. And therefore we see this is the same conch shell which Lord Krishna blows in the beginning of the Kurukshetra war. That conch shell is known as Panchajana. So this conch shell was obtained actually from this demon, the body of the demon which was made up of a conch. So the Lord takes this conch shell and then he goes to Samyamani. This is the abode of Lord Yamaraj. So Krishna and Balaram, both of them go to the abode of Lord Yamaraj and Krishna first blows this conch shell loudly outside the abode of Lord Yamaraj. And Yamaraj comes out and when he sees that Krishna and Balaram have themselves come, he offers them all respect. So Yamaraj, we know, is one of the Mahajans. So he immediately identifies that the Supreme Lords have come to my place. So he offers them all respect and he makes them sit down. And then he asks them, what is the purpose of your visit that you have come all the way to visit me in my abode? And then Krishna and Balaram say that we have actually come to take back the son of our guru. And Krishna says that consider this as my supreme ruling and you give the son back. Because obviously if someone has gone to Yamaloka and apparently he has done so much sins, then he has to finish his time in Yamaloka. He has to suffer that much and then only he can go out of Yamaloka. But Krishna tells Yamaraj that consider this to be my supreme ruling and you return the son of a guru to us. And Yamaraj immediately follows because obviously he knew this is the Supreme Lord and their instructions are above everything else, above the moral codes of Dharma where a person should first finish his tenure in Yamaloka and then he should be released. No, Yamaraj immediately returns the son to Krishna and Balaram. So Krishna and Balaram bring back the son to their guru. And then they ask the guru. The guru is very happy to have his son back. And then they ask Sandipani Muni that would you like us to render any other service to you? And at that time Sandipani Muni says that no, I'm completely satisfied. And I'm so satisfied by this unusual activity which you all did for me, this unusual Guru Dakshina that you all give me, that I know that both of you all are the Supreme Lords and that you all are beyond any blessings. But still, it is my duty as your guru to bless you, to bless both of you. And therefore, I'm giving you the blessing that your glories will be broadcast all over the universe, all over the world. You all will become famous. Your fame will spread far and wide. This is the blessing I'm giving you. And I also bless you that whatever words you speak, they will always remain fresh. They will increasingly remain important. And not only in this universe, but in all places, in all the universes. Not only in this millennia, but for all ages to come. So for all ages to come, for in all places and for all times, your words will remain ever fresh. They will never become boring or anything like that. Or they will not lose their importance or they will not lose their potency. So this is the blessing which Sandipani Mani gives to Krishna and Balaram. And Prabhupada explains, and therefore if we see the Bhagavad Gita spoken by the Lord, it is not that it was only important in a certain era when the Bhagavad Gita was actually spoken. The Bhagavad Gita is important and its application is required in every millennia. Whichever age is going on, Satya Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, Kali Yuga, whichever age is going on, The Bhagavad Gita doesn't lose its relevance, nor does it lose its importance. And it stays ever fresh. That is what Prabhupada explains. That is because of the blessings of Sandipani Muni. That Krishna got this, when he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, it stayed ever fresh. So this is the whole pastime which happens, which is being described by Uddhava to Vidura over here. That how Sandipani Muni requires his son back and how Krishna and Balaram obtain their son back. So we see that all the pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam, when we read these different pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam, they are always teaching us something. Some aspect of devotional service is being imparted to us through these pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They are teaching us, first of all, what is important or what is to be accepted for increasing our devotional service and what is to be rejected. And all these pastimes also teach us that how we must follow whatever instructions are being given through these pastimes. And we must also follow these instructions. Not only it is for the hearer who was hearing it, like in this case it was Vidura or Parikshit Maharaj, but it is also applicable to all of us. So in this purport or in this verse particularly, the pastime is instructing us that how the Lord is setting an ideal example for all of us to follow by accepting a spiritual master, by rendering menial service to him, by showing the necessity of acquiring knowledge. Even though the Lord was proficient, he is the source of all knowledge, still the Lord showed that it is necessary to acquire spiritual knowledge, that too from a bona fide authority. So accept a spiritual master, render menial service to him, acquire knowledge from him, and after that be grateful. Show the quality of gratitude to whoever has rendered some service to you. So these are some of the things which we learn from this pastime. Now if we see, the Lord is teaching here, what do we learn from these pastimes? The Lord is setting an example, but we also learn that we ourselves should become a very good example. This is what is the message that is being given in this verse and in the purport. That how we, following in the Lord's footsteps, we also become a very good example for others to follow. Not only through a personal example, not only through our practice, but also through our precept, like through the words. So the words we speak, the way we conduct ourselves, and also whatever we practice, all these things should be setting an ideal example for others to follow. So it is a great responsibility of a leader that he uses all these three aspects, his words, his actions, and his personal example, to set an ideal example for others. And not only does a leader set an ideal example himself, and not only is he good when his time is there, but actually a good leader leaves a legacy. So not that one leader was very good, he set a very good example and he was really good, but after that there is a chaos. No, he sets a very good legacy and goes. And we see that in our own movement. We see when Srila Prabhupada was present, he actually was an ideal example. If you read the Leelamrita, we read all the pastimes, the way Prabhupada used to conduct himself, the way he was preaching, the way he was dealing with his disciples. He was a perfect example for all of us to follow. But not only was he perfectly setting an example for the future generations to come, but he also left a good legacy and went in the form of all our spiritual masters, in the form of all his disciples. So we see how ISKCON is flourishing, how it's growing from strength to strength. It is only because of the legacy which Prabhupada left. So a leader, that is the quality of an ideal leader. He sets a good example, but he also ensures there's a legacy. And this is very clearly visible from the pastime of Rishabhdev, which is mentioned in the 5th canto. So King Nabhi, who was Rishabhdev's father, he was actually a Raj Rishi, he was an ideal king. He was ruling his kingdom so nicely. But then not only did he rule his kingdom nicely, but he ensured that his son was well trained to again carry on the work of ruling the kingdom, and which was Rishabhdev. And not only did he, just that he is my son, so he should become the next king automatically. No, he actually took feedback. He actually observed his son's activities. And he saw that not only he himself was pleased with Rishabhdev's activities, but there was like in management, nowadays management circles, we see there is a 360 degree feedback which is given. So not only a person gets feedback from his superiors, like his immediate boss and the boss beyond that, but he also takes feedback from his peers and he also takes feedback from his juniors. This is called a 360 degree appraisal system. So actually that is what King Nabhi also laid down for his own son Rishabhdev. He took feedback from the Brahmanas. He took feedback from all his council, like the ministers that were there. He also took feedback from the citizens who were there. And he saw that everyone loves King Rishabhdev. And only after he was assured that Rishabhdev will be an ideal king. We know Rishabhdev is the supreme lord only. But still King Nabhi did all these things as an ideal leader himself. To set a good example that this is the way you choose your next successor. Or this is the way you leave a good legacy and go. So then after ensuring all these checkpoints, he actually installed King Rishabhdev as the next king. So we see that there are three types of people who perform their prescribed duties or who, you know, do this, setting an example. There are three types of people who do their prescribed duties very meticulously. There is one, those who are attached to the results of their activities, who are extremely attached. They are desperate that the result of their activity should be always good and they should be successful in whatever endeavor they are doing. So such people meticulously engage in their activity and they follow. They execute their duties very well so that the result that they get will be good. That is the first category of people who will do their activities very nicely. Then the second category of people who meticulously do their prescribed duties very well is actually those people who know that performing this activity is actually meant for their purification. So these people, even though the activity that itself may not be very relishing for them, but still they perform it very nicely, they perform it very meticulously because they know that this activity is meant for their purification. And the third type of people who do their activities or who carry on their prescribed duties nicely are actually people who are absolutely detached. They are 100% detached from the results that will come of their activity. They are absolutely not attached to the result of their activity and yet they perform their duty well. Why? Because they want to set an ideal example for others to follow. That no matter whether you are attached to the activity or you are detached from the activity, whether the activity is meant for your purification or no, but you do your activity very well so that others can follow and others can learn from your example. So these are the three types of people who do their activity nicely. In fact, Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, he tells that for a self-realized person, there is no need of any purification because he is already self-realized, he is already liberated. So there is no need for any purification and he is actually absolutely detached. It doesn't matter to him so much what will be the result of that activity because he is a detached person. So he doesn't need to do that activity because he is already purified and he is also detached. If the results of the activity don't matter to him. But still, to set an ideal example, Krishna says that this type of people carry on their activities or their prescribed duties very nicely. So that the people who are actually doing this activity for purification, they learn that yes, I must also do my duty. They learn from these people who are already pure that if they can do their duty nicely, I must also do my duty nicely. And also to set an example for people who are very attached. Because slowly this seeing the example of these detached people doing their activity nicely, the people who are attached will slowly become detached from their activity. And in fact, Krishna gives his own example to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. In the third chapter, in the 22nd verse, Krishna tells Arjuna, Name parthasti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinchana nanu vaptam avaptavyam varta evacha karmani. So what is the meaning? O son of Pritha, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems. Nor am I in want of anything, nor have I a need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. So Krishna is giving his own example to Arjuna that I do not need to do any work. Neither am I attached to the result that, oh, I want this result, therefore I should do my activity very nicely. Neither does the Lord need any purification. But still Krishna does his prescribed duty very nicely. So why does he do his prescribed duty very nicely? So that people will follow his example. Prabhupada explains that in the purport. That same way Krishna did his prescribed duties very nicely throughout all the stages of his life. So if we actually scrutinizingly examine Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's life, Krishna was doing his duty nicely in every relationship that he had. If we see his, you know, friendship, Krishna was a perfect friend. When he used to play with his friends, it is not that he always used to, you know, I'm the supreme lord, therefore my friends have to do whatever I say. No. In fact, there is one pastime in the Krishna book where Mother Yashoda, Krishna and Balram are playing with their friends outside. And Mother Yashoda had sent Rohini that you go and bring Krishna and Balram because they have been playing since morning and it is time for their lunch. But Rohini doesn't succeed because Krishna and Balram are so engrossed in playing with their friends. And then Mother Yashoda has to come herself. So she comes and tells Krishna and Balram that come, it is time for your lunch. Why are you all playing like dirty street children? She tells them that why don't you come? Your father is waiting for lunch. You all come home. So when Krishna and Balram hear that their father is waiting for lunch for them, they immediately start going. But as soon as they are leaving, all their friends start teasing Krishna and Balram. That, oh, you two boys are leaving when the game was at its peak. We were having so much fun and now you all are leaving and going and you all are spoiling all the fun in the game which we were playing. So tomorrow we will not allow you all to play with us. That is how the friends threaten. And actually Krishna and Balaram get scared. The Lord gets scared when he hears that his friends will no longer play with him tomorrow. So they again go back and they start playing with their friends. So we see how perfectly Krishna is reciprocating as a friend. Of course, then Mother Yashoda chastises the cowherd boys and she tells them, let them come home because they have to take their bath and they have to have their lunch. So then Krishna and Balaram go with Yashoda. But we see through this pastime that how the Lord acted perfectly in his relationship as a friend with the cowherd boys. Then we see Krishna and Balaram as a son. So we see that not only was Krishna an ideal son to Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. We see the famous picture where Krishna is carrying Nanda Maharaj's slippers on his head. So he was serving Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda so nicely. So not only he was an ideal son to them, but also when he came to Mathura and he started living with Devaki and Vasudev. That time also Krishna was an ideal son to Devaki and Vasudev. And it happens just before they go, like before this verse, they go actually to Devaki and Vasudev when they release them from the prison after Kamsa has been killed. There is a very nice conversation which has been described by Prabhupada in the Krishna book. So there Krishna and Balaram are actually telling Vasudev and Devaki that we are feeling so sorry that you all could not witness our childhood pastimes. You all could not shower your motherly love or fatherly love on us because of circumstances we had to be carried, taken away from you. And you all missed all our young childhood pastimes. So we are feeling very sorry that you all had to suffer like this. And now we want to serve you in whatever way you want. We would like to serve you and we would like to mitigate your miseries. So this is how Krishna and Balaram are talking to Devaki and Vasudev. They are being an ideal son to their parents. So even in this relationship we see. And then Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda want to go back from Mathura. They had also come with Krishna and Balaram too. And they also witnessed the killing of Kamsa and all. So they want to go back to Vrindavan. And that time Krishna and Balaram again go and speak to Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. And even that dialogue is so beautiful. How they are acting as the son so perfectly with their parents. They are telling Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda that we are so grateful to you that you brought us up so nicely. Even though we are not your real children, but no parents will shower so much love as you all showered on both of us. And please be assured that we will come back very soon. We will stay with our other parents, Devaki and Vasudev, for some time. We will satisfy their desires also a little bit. And then we will come back soon to Vrindavan to be with you all. So Krishna and Balaram are assuring both of them. They are, you know, doing their duty as a son so beautifully to both their parents. So this is how the Lord is, setting an ideal example as a friend, setting an ideal example as a son also. And then we in the Krishna book we see that Krishna was actually setting an ideal example as a grahastha also. So when he was married and he was living with his queens in Dwaraka, he, Prabhupada says that actually like a henpecked husband, Krishna used to go behind his queens. The queens used to feel that Krishna, my husband is completely under my control. And Krishna used to play that part well. He was a henpecked husband who was to just listen to, you know, as if I'm under your control and I will do whatever you all say. Like that Krishna used to go behind his queens. So such a perfect, you know, reciprocation he was doing as a husband. That the queens were completely satisfied with him. And it is also described that as a grahastha, he was citing an ideal example. His daily routine has been described in the Krishna book. So he used to get up early in the morning, he used to do the morning rituals very nicely. And then he used to chant, obviously he was chanting his own holy names, but he used to chant, he used to do meditation. So all these ideal grahastha activities he used to do in the morning. And yet we see that in the world there are so many unscrupulous people who don't follow all these ideal examples which Krishna and Balaram set, as a son, as an ideal son, as an ideal friend, as an ideal husband. But they want to follow the other activities of Krishna. That, oh, if Krishna did Rasalila, why can't we also do Rasalila? Why can't we also dance with other people's wives? So these are the examples which people want to follow. But they neglect the other examples where the Lord is actually setting a perfect example. The Lord is being an ideal human being in different relationships. This is all ignored by unscrupulous men. But they just want to follow this example of the Lord. That if he can dance with so many girls, why can't we dance? But sometimes, you know, that question may arise. That why did the Lord then break this, you know, some of the scriptural injunctions? Obviously, it's not an injunction that you dance with other people's wives. And Krishna was actually doing that. In the middle of the night, he was dancing with the gopis who were married to other people. If you materially see this, he was actually marrying, he was actually dancing with other people's wives. And Prabhupada explains that there are two reasons why Krishna, in so-called way, breaks the scriptural rules and regulations, even though actually he sets an ideal example throughout all the pastimes that are described. So Prabhupada says that there are two reasons. The first reason why Krishna sometimes breaks all the scriptural rules and regulations is to actually show the whole world that had he not broken the whole rules and regulations, how will the world realize that he is the Supreme Lord? So Prabhupada says just to establish his supremacy, just to show that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sometimes he may break the scriptural rules and regulations, or sometimes he may break the so-called moral principles by which the world operates. And therefore, he sometimes performs all these alaukik pastimes. Now, we know stones, when usually put in water, have to sink. But if Lord Ram had not done that pastime, where if his name is written, the stones float on the water, then how will people recognize that Lord Ram is the Supreme Lord? Because all his other activities were very human-like. So people can actually take, you know, these people to be just, oh, they were just ordinary human beings who had some powers who came in the past, in the history. That is how many people describe Krishna and Ram and all these personalities as. So if Krishna and Ram break certain scriptural rules and regulations, it is mainly to establish that they are the Supreme Lord. Krishna does these alaukik pastimes, like, you know, lifting the Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand, defying gravity, defying the law of gravity, he is making the Govardhan Hill actually float on his little finger. So all these pastimes are done by them mainly to show, mainly to establish that he is the Supreme Lord, so that people don't take their pastimes cheaply and people don't consider that they are not the Supreme Lord. They don't take them to be ordinary human beings. And Prabhupada says that the second reason why Krishna and Balaram sometimes break the scriptural rules and regulations is actually to protect his devotees. So when there is a question of protecting his devotees, Krishna doesn't care about breaking any rules and regulations. And we see this in so many pastimes. When Krishna wants to reciprocate with the love of his devotees, or when his devotees are in danger, then Krishna is absolutely ready to defy any scriptural rules and regulations. And one such example which comes to our mind is in the Kurukshetra war. We know that Krishna had actually taken a vow that he will not fight in the war. And under that condition only he tells Krishna, Arjuna and Duryodhan to choose. That I'm not going to fight, I'm not going to pick up any weapons. Now you choose, whom do you want? And still Arjuna wholeheartedly chooses Krishna to be with him in the war. But we see that to protect that same Arjuna, when he found that Arjuna's life is under threat from Bhishma Dev, he actually picks up the broken wheel of a chariot and he rushes towards Bhishma Dev to kill. And that famous photograph is also there, that painting is also there, where Krishna is rushing with the chariot wheel and Bhishma Dev is just standing to receive that chariot wheel and to get killed at the hands of the Lord. And then Arjuna has to run and he catches hold of Krishna's feet and he doesn't allow him to go further. And he says, no, my Lord, you said you will not pick up any weapons. So don't please break your promise. That is the rule you had laid down. But Krishna was not caring that I will be infamous. I will be known as a person who broke his rule. I will be known as a person. My reputation will go down that I had made this promise. I will not pick up any weapons. But still here I am rushing with a chariot wheel to kill Bhishma. Krishna did not care about that. And why he did not care about that? Because for him the higher principle is protecting his devotees. That is the highest principle. So Krishna will not care about breaking the rules and regulations if his devotee, he finds that his devotee is under threat and his devotee has to be protected under any circumstances. So that is the reason why Krishna sometimes breaks the rules and scriptural rules and regulations. The first reason is to show that he is the supreme lord, to establish his supremacy. And the second reason he sometimes breaks his the scriptural rules and regulations is mainly to protect his devotees. When there is that urgency which comes up, the situation is such that he has to take some action to protect his devotees. But otherwise, Krishna is always setting an ideal example. He is always going by the scriptural rules and regulations. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. He lays down the rules and regulations and he is the one who follows them meticulously. And that is what we are seeing here in this example also. In this verse also, that he is setting an ideal example by accepting a guru and then rewarding the guru with guru dakshina. So, and when we see Krishna showing that he is setting an ideal example and he is following the scriptural rules and regulations nicely and doing his prescribed duties so well, when we read such activities of the Lord, that increases the faith of a devotee in the Lord. That yes, my Lord will always be there to protect me and I have full faith in the Lord because he is an ideal example for me to follow. So that is the purpose of these pastimes. When we read these pastimes, it is to learn how we become an ideal example by seeing the Lord himself being an ideal example, and also to develop our faith that the Lord will always be there because we are seeing the Lord being an ideal in all his relationships with other devotees, and therefore he will always be there ideally reciprocating with me as a devotee. So we'll end over here. It's time, and we'll see if there are any questions or comments or corrections. I believe Krishna chooses any devotee to be his parent or his teacher or his friend. It is only because that devotee's desire was like that. So I don't know what is the pastime. Like we know Devaki and Vasudeva, Prishni and Sutapa in their previous lives, and they did lots of austerities to get Krishna and Balaram as their son. And therefore Krishna and Balaram chose Devaki and Vasudeva as their parents. So I don't know what is the history of Sandipani Muni, but usually when the Lord chooses someone to be his guru or to be his friend or to be his wife or to be one of the gopis or his parents, then it is only because that devotee wanted Krishna to play that role with Krishna and Balaram. And that is why the Lord chooses to reciprocate with that devotee's feelings perfectly, that the Lord chooses. So Sandipani Muni may have had that desire that he should serve the Lord in some way, and therefore the Lord chose him to become his guru. No, he was the spiritual master of Krishna. That is what has been mentioned by Prabhupada.
Okay. Krishna, which one we should follow? Krishna's words or his action or both?
So like we mentioned in our lecture, that a person who actually sets, you know, how all of us have to become ideal examples, learning from these pastimes of the Lord where he himself is setting an ideal example. So, like we mentioned, that we set an ideal example not only through our actions, but through our words. And the same thing Krishna did. If you see his personal life, he was setting an ideal example, like we mentioned, through his, you know, being an ideal friend, being an ideal grahastha, being an ideal husband. But also his words were ideal, which is, you know, spoken in the form of Bhagavad Gita. So both we follow. But we always, the devotional aspect, the bhakti aspect is there in that, and we always follow these instructions, whether it's the instructions of the Lord or his life, under a bona fide authority. So we understand all this through a bona fide guru, and then only we follow Krishna and Balaram's activities as well as their words. Otherwise, we can misinterpret their activities or their words if we have not learnt under a proper guru, and then we can do what unscrupulous people sometimes do. We've heard in India, many people think, you know, that Krishna danced with the gopis, so why can't I dance with the gopis? Yeah, because that action also is very pure. But we have to understand that action correctly under the guidance of a spiritual master. Then we will understand that even the Ras Leela which he did was actually it is considered to be the highest epitome of devotional service, the Ras Leela. And it is considered to be so pure that we don't speak about the Ras Leela in the initial stages of devotional service, because it's a very pure activity which the Lord did. So only if we have the correct understanding from a proper guru, then only we will understand these activities. But people who are following this Rasleela and all, and dancing with other people's wives, they have not understood it correctly from a proper spiritual master, and therefore they are doing a wrong activity. And like we said that, you know, we follow the actions. Krishna was an ideal grahastha. He used to get up early in the morning and he used to do his prescribed duties. So these are some of the actions we can follow from his life. We can also get up early. We chant our rounds nicely. Krishna was setting an ideal example. In fact, Prabhupada goes on to give the example of Lord Shiva also. Prabhupada says that many people like to follow Lord Shiva's example by smoking ganja or by smoking hookah or whatever. Oh, Lord Shiva does, so we should also do. But Prabhupada says, then follow his example of being an ideal Vaishnava. That is one aspect which is very conveniently ignored by common people. Lord Shiva was an ideal Vaishnava. He is always in meditation, chanting on his beads, on Sankarshan. He is always meditating on him. And he always, even in his instructions, if you know, in the Bhagavatam, wherever Lord Shiva's pastimes come up, or even if we see in the Daksha Yajna, Lord Shiva's pastime, his behavior, how ideally he behaved, even though he was insulted in an entire assembly by Daksha. But he was so tolerant. So instead of following all these qualities of Lord Shiva, people like to follow the ganja drinking pastime. So Prabhupada says that, or otherwise he says, if you want to follow actions of Lord Shiva, you also drink an ocean of poison. Will you be able to do that? That is how Prabhupada questions. So it is very important to understand the activities of Krishna as well as his words from a bona fide guru. And then we will have the correct understanding of how to follow his activities as well as his words. Accepting a spiritual master, we see in this verse especially that Krishna is setting an ideal example. Now Krishna is actually the supreme lord. He is the supreme cause of all causes. And he is actually the original guru. Because from him all the Vedas, all the Vedic scriptures have come. But yet he is accepting as guru. So what do we understand from this pastime? We understand that no one can understand any Vedic instructions or any scriptures unless it is studied under a guru. And if you are trying to understand things yourself, or if you feel that no, there is no necessity of guru, we can be like a rudderless ship. You know how a rudderless ship is? It just floats here and there on the ocean of material world. So that is how we become if we don't accept a spiritual master in our life. And also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that lava matra sadhu sangha sarva shastra kohe. That means a moment of association of a pure devotee can actually open the doors of liberation. That is the importance of accepting a spiritual master or associating with pure devotees in your life. So any advancement which we want to make, and if we see in the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, so in whichever incarnation the Lord came, he always accepted a spiritual master. So even as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepted a spiritual master, and only when his spiritual masters told him to start chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, from that point onwards, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started manifesting his activities as a devotee of the Lord. Till before that, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just acting as a, you know, very great scholarly pandit with absolutely no interest in devotional service. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to teach other devotees who were chanting. And he used to teach them, tease them, what you are doing chanting this holy names of the Lord. But when he himself accepted a spiritual master, only then he started manifesting his activities as a devotee. So through these examples we learn that if the Lord is doing that, how important it is to accept a spiritual master. And like I was mentioning to the other Prabhu, if we don't understand the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita from a bona fide spiritual master who is coming under one of the four sampradayas and who is actually following his guru's instructions very nicely, till that time we will not be able to understand the instructions of the Lord or any, you know, pastimes of the Lord. We can misinterpret the pastimes and we can tend to become completely wavered in our understanding. And we see that happening in India so much. There are so many so-called fake gurus who actually are not coming in a bona fide lineage or in a bona fide sampradaya, and they are misleading their disciples, their so-called disciples. They are not actually trying to connect their disciples with Krishna. But instead of that, there are so many hodgepodge things which are happening, and we are seeing that these people's lives are ruined because they haven't accepted a proper spiritual master. So we scrutinizingly assess that, okay, which sampradaya and which spiritual master I want to accept. And then we accept a spiritual master following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Lord Krishna, who both accepted a spiritual master in their life. It's time up now, we'll stop here. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.